thanks. Thanks a lot for the invitation. This is work which has been going on over the past many, many years. Those are my collaborators, the ones in black have permanent positions, the ones in red, look at their names. They may apply for postdocs or faculty positions and remember them. They have funny names. This guy has many Swedish signs, you know, very easy to recognize. Anyway, and those are the guys who gave me money. So I'll begin very fast. Back 20 years ago, Strominger and Wafa showed that in string theory, one can reproduce the black hole entropy. How did they do it? They took a bunch of strings and brains at zero coupling, zero gravitational coupling, and then they just counted how many states this had, and this got them the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of the black hole. So this is, you know, nice, beautiful success, you know, 20 years ago, you know, 2,000 citations, everybody's very happy about it. But there's another question which you can ask, which is a more refined question. What's happening if you take one particular microstate? Instead of taking all of them, looking at them as an ensemble, just take one particular microstate and take it to strong coupling. And for 20 years, the standard lore has been that as gravity becomes stronger, brain configurations get smaller, the black hole horizon becomes bigger, there's a Horowitz-Kolchinsky correspondence point, and you recover the standard black hole. However, over the past 12 years or so, basically our collaborators and, you know, the guys who saw on the first slide and, you know, many others, we have been showing that some of these Strominger-Wafa microstates, some of these things which count the black hole entropy, when you go to the regime of parameters where the black hole exists, where Strominger-Wafa, where the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy exists, in that regime of parameters, some of these microstates rather become configurations like this. They look the same as a black hole, they have the same region, the same throat, but instead of having a horizon, they have a smooth cap. And the way I understand the Fassbender proposal, the Samir's proposal, is that the black hole, again, so some of the microstates become this kind of horizonless configurations. The question is it possible that maybe all the microstates become such configurations? And if that's the case, then the black hole should be thought of as a statistical description of a huge number of horizonless configurations and not as a fundamental object. This is the way I view the Fassbender proposal. So instead of having a black hole, one should actually rather use these kind of guys. Those are the microstates. This is just a thermodynamic description of the physics. It's a bit similar to an ideal gas. When you have an ideal gas, when you have the gas in the room, it can be described in two ways. You can either describe it using fluid mechanics, PV equals nRT, thermodynamics, you know, very beautiful. Just treat the gas as a continuous fluid. It's perfect if you want to fly airplanes. However, if you want to ask more detailed questions, like shot noise, for example, it's not a good description. It breaks down at the level of the mean free path. In a similar fashion, the black hole solution should be thought, the one which you read from textbooks, should be thought as a very good description of physics on a large scale, is a good thermal description, which is good for gravitational lensing, which is good if you want to stay far away from the black hole. However, as you approach the horizon, there should be a new description in terms of microstate geometries, instead of in terms of the guys which I told you about, which takes over. It's exactly like when you have a gas, again, on large scales, you have PV equals nRT, it's a perfect description. When you go to small scales, it's a new description in terms of molecules, actually. And the guys we are building are the molecules. Now, this is nice and beautiful, but what are we doing is something, again, very problematic, and this is one of the things which I really want to emphasize. We are trying to replace the black hole by something. And ever since Hawking came up with the paradox many, many years ago, this has been, you know, many, many people have been, you know, including many in the audience, they have been trying to replace the black hole by some structure at the horizon to allow the information to get out. As you saw this morning, there's a theorem by Hawking, and, you know, the theorem has been reinforced recently by Samir, that you have to put something at the horizon to get the information out, and people are building, you know, gravastar, quark stars, people are putting gases of wormholes, Bose-Einstein condenses of gravitons, people in quantum gravity have something. Everybody, in many fields, people are trying to put something at the horizon to get the information out and, you know, to see this picture of the black hole. But there's a problem. There are actually three problems. There are three very stringent tests which one must satisfy if you want to put anything at the horizon. The first is that your configuration, whatever you are building some stars or some configuration, your thing must have the same growth with G string, with G Newton as the black hole horizon. Now, as you well know, black holes, their size grows with G Newton. If you make gravity twice stronger, the black hole becomes bigger. On the other hand, normal stuff, you know, if I take, I don't know, this pointer or something, if I make gravity twice stronger, gravity pulls things together. Gravity is an attractive force. Gravity is not a repelling force. And therefore, if you want to make some stuff, your stuff should grow with G Newton at the same rate as the black hole horizon. And that's very non-trivial. Now, the way this happens for the configurations we build, and, you know, David talked about them in this morning and so on, is that they contain actually objects which are solitonic. So the first thing you have to realize is that in string theory, G Newton is equal to G string squared. So when you increase G Newton, you increase G string. Now, string theory contains solitonic and semi-solitonic objects like D brains and NS5 brains, which have a tension. And the tension of these objects goes like 1 over G string. And therefore, as you make Gnuto larger, you make G-string larger, and those guys become lighter. And therefore, there are some centrifugal forces which make your configuration grow. So the point out of this, so again, this is one important feature of these configurations, and the wisdom out of this is the following. If you want to build something at the horizon, if you want to build a structure at the horizon, you cannot use normal stuff. You must use non-perturbative degrees of freedom of your theory. And those should not be non-perturbative degrees of freedom with respect to some U1 gauge field and so on and so forth. They should not be like, you know, solitons. They should be gravitational non-perturbative degrees of freedom, either solitons or some other more complicated configurations like D-brains. This is the first lesson. Unless you do that, your configuration is going to be horizon size, but it's just going to be fine-tuned. The moment you make gravity a bit stronger, your thing is just going to collapse. You want whatever you build, you want it to have the same growth of G-Newton or G-string as the black hole horizon. So this is point number one, and this was explained to me by Gary Horowitz again. Gary thought he was going to kill fuzzballs. The moment Samir had the paper, I remember I was in Santa Barbara, and Samir's paper came on the archive, and Gary said, aha, many people have been doing this, you know, for like, you know, 30 years, everybody and their brother came up with proposals for something in the horizon. This will collapse. The cheapest way to see it is that, you know, you make G-string stronger, this will just go smaller. And, you know, Per Krause and I did it, and, you know, it just, you know, we saw the same growth. And that, for me, this is one of the key, you know, if you cannot kill something, you know, if you cannot beat them, join them. Anyway. This is the first test. But seriously, I wanted to kill it. That was my purpose. You know, I wanted to kill it. I didn't believe it. You know, it sounded preposterous. And, you know, I said, okay, there's no way this can grow. But, you know, it really grew. And it's really subtle physics having to do with deep brains. Now, second problem is that you have to have a mechanism not to fall into a black hole. You want to build something at the horizon. Now, the horizon is a null surface. And you're trying to put something here. On the outer horizon, for example, or even on the inner horizon, wherever you want, it's a null surface. If you want to put something on the null surface, you cannot do that. Because on a null surface, you have to go with the speed of light. If whatever you are putting there is made of massless particles, it just dilutes. You solve the wave equation, it's a half a page calculation, it just goes into the black hole. In the crossing time, it's out. You cannot put it there. If it's massive particle, then you have to give it an infinite boost. It's an infinite energy. It just, you know, has more energy than the black hole. So, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. So again, you cannot do it. And essentially, you cannot just say, oh, I'm putting something at the horizon. I'm putting spins at the horizon. I'm putting a structure at the horizon, membranes. I'm putting quantum stuff at the horizon. You just cannot do that. Because again, whatever you are putting, it actually falls in. The only thing which you can put, again, is like, you know, these diffeos, which Strominger, Hawking, and Perry have, but, you know, they're massless. But, you know, they have no information. Well, if you want to put something which carries information, it is just going to fall in. Now, and again, the lesson, I'll tell you how microstate geometries evade this thing, but the lesson out of this is that, you know, if you don't have a support mechanism, go home and find one, because, you know, it's really crucial. If you don't have it, you know, you have no idea what's going on. Problem number three, which Samir emphasized this morning, is the following. There's a calculation by Oppenheimer and Schneider back from 1939 that when you have a shell of dust collapsing, you form a horizon. And if you take a mega big shell of dust, which has the size of the galaxy, you can form a black hole horizon. You know, we can have a black hole horizon being formed, you know, as we just stay here. You know, it can just form over us in this room. But then this is again the shell of dust. So it's a huge mega big shell of dust. At some point, it just goes inside the Schwarzschild. It forms a horizon. The curvature here can be as small as it gets. It can be as small as the curvature in this room. You don't expect quantum gravity. You don't expect anything to happen. The poor shell keeps on collapsing. You have a black hole, so this is the horizon. And at some point, like, you know, 10,000 years in the future, the shell realizes that, hey, you know, I'm at strong coupling. You know, I want to form, you know, fuzzball, string theory. I want to do stuff. But the shell is here. It's in this red region. What you want is to create something here. You want to create, again, some structure at the horizon, some fuzzball, firewall, call it whatever you want. You want to make it here, and from here to here, you have to go back in time 10,000 years. Now, I don't want stuff from the future to come back on me 10,000 years. This doesn't make any sense. This should be illegal in any theory. Now, maybe it does in whatever theory, you know, in some other theories, but, you know, this should not be allowed. And the problem is, again, you know that you have to go backwards in time. The way to do it was actually very nicely explained by Samir and also by Per Krause and Samir. Essentially, you have to use the fact that the black hole has e to the s microstates, which have no horizon. Now, when you have the shell of dust coming in, there are e to the s possible, it can actually tunnel into these configurations. And there's a tunneling probability, which is e to the minus s, estimated by Samir. And the black hole has e to the s microstates, and therefore it will actually, so the shell, even if the chance of going into any of these microstate configurations is very, very small, Overall, it will tunnel with the probability 1 by the Fermi-Golden rule. Again, you have e to the minus s probability and e to the s possible n states. By the Fermi-Golden rule, you tunnel with probability 1. Now, what we did actually was to actually take real microstate geometries made of, like, you know, flesh and blood in string theory after, like, you know, highly painful pain, and collapse a shell of D-brains and really calculate the coefficients. Because Samir's calculation, as you saw, okay, it has some, you know, things in the exponent which can have, like, you know, plus or minus 1 or square root of 2 or square root of 3. In the string theory calculations, you actually can calculate the exact coefficient. And what you find is that this probability of tunneling actually becomes 1 even a bit before it hits the horizon. It's actually quite nice. So again, coming back to the question to ask in the morning, do you form a shell by collapsing and by tunneling? Does the shell form after the horizon or before? Actually, what you find is that even when the shell is big enough, the tunneling probability becomes 1. You have e to the minus s probability and e to the s microstates, but there's another factor here, e to the something, which is again a small guy, much smaller than s, but there's a factor in front, which is actually much, much bigger than 1. So actually, your shell is going to tunnel into fuzzballs before it hits the horizon. That's at least a calculation coming from near extremal deep brains, string theory. Okay, if you don't like it, you don't like it, but that's a calculation which, you know, we can do with equal signs. Yes?
Naively, I would expect this tunneling probability to D to be e to the minus the free energy of the system, which is not the same as the entropy, but it's... Mm-hmm.
So our calculation was done at basically near extremal black holes. So our calculation was done near zero temperature. So I think you can neglect. So we took a supersymmetric microstates. So
close to extremality it works, but then it's not clear that far from extremality you
get it's this. Possible. So clearly, we don't want to do a calculation with equal signs. That was my purpose. So we just wanted to, we took some D brains, some NS5 brains. We tunneled them over some barriers, and we computed exactly the tunneling probability. That's something which I can do because at extremality, I have both the endpoint and the initial data. If you want to do the calculation away from extremality, I don't have the endpoints. So I don't have enough microstate when you go away from extremality. I'll talk about this a bit later in the talk. I don't have enough microstates when I go away from extremality to do that. Maybe we can discuss later because I'm... So the point is, if you want to do that, if you want your structure to be formed at all, it must have the black hole entropy. If it doesn't have the black hole entropy, if you don't have it to those microstates, it doesn't work. And again, the lesson is, you should not brush aside quantum tunneling at the horizon. It's actually important. Even if the black hole is big and fat and classical, quantum tunneling is there. So how do these microstates look like? It's not very hard. Basically, you build them in some five-dimensional supergravity, and they have magnetic fluxes wrapping various two cycles. And these magnetic fluxes can act as a source for electric charge. They can give rise to the mass. They can give rise to the black hole angular momentum. And instead of having a black hole which has mass, charge, and angular momentum, you just have a configuration which has bubbles wrapped by flux. And these bubbles wrapped by flux, they actually have the same charge as the black holes. Those of you who are familiar with Klebanov-Strassley string theory is very similar. Or fluxon pontifications, Giddings-Kaczuk-Wolchinski, it's a very similar mechanism. It's just that, you know, it's happening in a different corner of parameters. And there's a nice story by Gibbons and Warner about how these solitons evade various GR theorems from 20 years ago and so on and so forth. Now, why are they not collapsing? What's the reason why these guys are staying at the horizon size? Why don't they collapse? Well, from a string theory perspective, if you work in higher dimensions, the answer is very simple. You have cycles wrapped by which are topological, which are wrapped by fluxes. The flux is quantized, the 17. If the flux is twice smaller, the energy of the flux is actually bigger by a factor of 4. So when you have a flux wrapping a cycle, if you make the cycle smaller and the flux is quantized, the flux wants to pull out the cycle. And the flux actually acts like a balloon trying to keep your fluxes large. And this is actually the mechanism which actually keeps these guys from collapsing. And Gibbons and Warner actually showed that if you want to get a classical solution obeying, again, you know, some supergravity equations of motion, these classical solutions actually should have this mechanism. This is the only mechanism which exists in the classical limit. There is no other mechanism. Now, many people are trying to say, oh, I'm building stuff at the horizon, but it's all quantum. It's all quantum, 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 quantum. I have a huge thing. It's all quantum pressure, quantum stuff. Yes, you can hide behind quantum. And people are hiding behind quantum. Again, you know, the Valley, for example, you know, they have this graviton, quantum, they say the graviton, they say it's quantum. And then, you know, they just brush the problem under the rug. You cannot do that because the black hole has a Hilbert space, which is e to the s dimensional. If anybody in that Hilbert space, has a semi-classical limit, which it should have, again, by all arguments, okay, there are gazillions of arguments that it should have a classical limit. The moment it has a classical limit, you actually get into this. There's no other mechanism to support at the horizon.
Actually, this is an explanation for why you don't want the cycles to collapse, but what about the, you know, sort of the radial collapse? That's in the, you know, the, so to speak, non-compact.
No, the cycles are in the non-compact direction. There is different from fluxion modification. In fluxion modification, the cycles are in the compact direction, and space-time is in the non-compact. This is exactly flipped. Okay. The equations are the same. Okay. So again, and the question is, what about 4D? Why does it look so weird? Why can't I just do that if I take 4D gravity with some fields and so on and so forth? The problem is, if you compactify this configuration to four dimensions, you have Gibbons-Hawking centers, which actually can have negative mass and negative charge. They actually appear as natural objects in this game. And if you look at them from a 4D perspective, they appear to be very unusual. They're objects which have negative mass. They don't exist in your usually effective 4D theory, but they come out naturally out of string theory. Also, orientifolds come out very naturally, and you cannot build them anywhere else. And again, if you don't work in a theory which has these objects, your stuff is just going to collapse. There is no way to keep normal stuff at the horizon unless you have this kind of structure, unless you have this kind of matter. This is the kind of matter which you need to put to hang at the horizon.
Good question. So if I object, I can fill in details later that orientifolds are non-perturbatively unstable.
So that's a more complicated. So there's a classical question about this, about whether I can build this structure, whether I obey equations of motion. Then there's a question about instability. Am I top of the hill, bottom of the hill? Am I metastable, stable? That's a second order question. There's a question at the beginning, do you have to satisfy the equation of motion? If you put stuff at the horizon, it's not unstable. It's just not a solution. It just goes in, flush.
Well, it's not really, right? You're arguing that these things don't collapse, but
they can be shown to be unstable, absolutely. And I'll show you later why they can be unstable. But there's a question about building anything. Can you build anything? Can you span a Hilbert space with objects, which then can move into each other? I'm very happy. But at the beginning, I just want to get the Hilbert space spanned, and then we can discuss what they do, what's the dynamics. But it's good to separate the questions. But the first question is, do you have anything which obeys equations of motion which stays there, stable or unstable? And okay, for supersymmetric, for us it's easy because it's all stable, but far away, when you go away from supersymmetry, it's more unclear. So how do you do this? I think Emil will talk more about in his talk. So we also want to get entropy, because I told you, if you don't have the entropy, if you don't have E to the S, if this shell of yours doesn't have the black hole entropy, you cannot form it. You cannot get the tunneling, you cannot get it formed, unless you go back 10,000 years in time, which you don't want to. How do you form it? Well, there are some objects in string theory called supercubes, which people have discussed. They have an entropy. It's not enough. You can build other objects called superstrata. They have more entropy. They depend on arbitrary functions of two variables. They are horribly complicated solutions. And if you count them, you can argue that they can actually have the right degrees of freedom to give you rise to the black hole entropy. I'm not going to get into this discussion. It's quite technical, and I think Emil will have some discussion about it. I just want to advertise, this is the biggest class of solutions known to mankind, of Einstein's equations. Again, you give me an arbitrary function of two variables, any function you want of two variables, that's an infinite number of functions of one variable, and every function of one variable is an infinite number of Fourier parameters. So don't give me I have a solution that depends on three variables. This is double infinite number of parameters which gets these solutions, but we have them, and obtaining them was very complicated. There's a lot of string theory input coming into their construction, and we had this paper which is called Habermas Superstratum, which showed that they really exist. So again, the entropy comes from these highly, highly complicated configurations, but for extremal solutions, you can get them. So for supersymmetric solutions, the story is you have a huge number of them. They are due to CFT states. Again, from an AD-CFT perspective, it makes sense that they have no horizon. And I'm not going to get into this. The story is the Stromage of alpha microstates. You go from weak coupling to strong coupling. They keep on growing. They never get a horizon. So for extremal black holes which are supersymmetric, you never have a horizon, neither at weak coupling nor at strong coupling, nowhere in between. There's a similar story for non-supersymmetric extremal black holes. I have a paper with my student coming up about the Kerr solution, the new horizon extremal Kerr. Exactly the same story can happen. It can actually, there's no horizon. You just get, these kind of bubbling solutions. Now, this is nice and beautiful, but the point is, this is all about extremal black holes. And many people have been saying, okay, you guys, in string theory, you are very good at extremal black holes, but when it goes from away from extremality, there's a problem, and so on and so forth. And indeed, for extremal black holes, the Penrose diagram is this. And, we're basically showing that, you have stuff from the singularity coming out and messing up the physics of the horizon scale. And that's basically happening. And, in principle, you could have a causal propagation from here to here. You can have stuff from the singularity which affects the physics on a large scale. That's common in string theory. Okay, it's the Polchinski-Strasser, Klebanov-Strasser, LLM, the Myers effect. This is common in string theory. You can actually have stuff going on a large scale. And again, maybe it's not so strange. What's strange is that when you have a non-extremal black hole, what Fassbohm and Fierro arguments tell you is that this structure should go all the way to the outer horizon, which is much, much more non-trivial. Now, how is this happening? And again, that's definitely stranger. How can you show that? Well, you have to build lots and lots of solutions. Well, Einstein's equation second order PDEs, you know, good luck, it's very hard. But there's a Romanian saying, you know, don't pray to the saint who doesn't help you. Instead of building them as fully backreacted solutions, which are like, you know, highly complicated, you can build them in a perturbative fashion. They're very similar to antibrains in fluxon pachifications. And, you know, essentially they give you metastable minimum, and they give you microstates of near extremum black holes. There's another way to build them, and again, another Romanian proverb, when a bird is nest, sometimes God makes the nest, when the bird is blind, and you know, sometimes you can just be lucky. And sometimes the second order PDEs running these factorized, and that's what David talked about in his talk, sometimes you can actually build non-extremal solutions by just factorization, which I have no idea where it comes from, but you know, it's, you know, magic from Bossart, Katmadas, and David. So the big deal is that for non-extremal, for near-extremal, this is the story. It's not this, it's this. All the way to the outer horizon, you have the resolution of the singularity. So, and I just want to get one slide about the gravastars. So there's a similar construction for neutral black holes by those guys using some fluxon pachification and some shell of brains. And essentially, people have been trying to actually build in string theory gravastars. If you do it, you actually get a neutral microstate. You get a shell of brains which has the correct growth to G Newton because they are D brains. They have 1 over G string in their tension. So you actually get this thing correctly. And it's saying exactly the Buchtal radius. Now, what we did was, okay, let's find a simpler incarnation. We just look at a simpler compactification, which has a bunch of brains. And what we found is that in order for some Friedwitten anomaly to be satisfied, you have a huge number of D6 brains coming out of this. So this configuration of Di Biteto and Danielson and Giri, the gravastar in string theory, it works at the beginning, but you know, at first glance, but you know, if you do more careful calculations, it's actually inconsistent. So for now, there are no gravastars in string theory, but I think if you do some more careful work, maybe one can build them. They would be neutral microstates. They would actually be giving you honest to goodness neutral microstates, and they satisfy the criteria because again, they're made of D brains, and therefore their tension grows with G Newton the way you want. That's again, built in. So, okay, I'm just going to get this, I'm just scanning through this. This is just, you know, generic arguments that microstates don't have, the black hole microstates don't have hair. There are basically, you know, four different directions, either by doing information theory, or by ADS-CFT, or by constructions, or by following microstates from weak to strong coupling, and they all tell you the same thing. The pure black hole states have no horizon. Now, this is, you can ask this instead of questions, but everybody usually asks these questions. First of all, everybody says, okay, nice, you guys are doing microstates, they're all beautiful, and they're all classical, but you know, why do you have classical? Do you expect the typical black hole microstates to be classical? Why do you like classical solutions so much? Well, I haven't fallen in love with them. It's just the classical solutions are the only ones where you can trust gravity, and you can have things under control. You can make a calculation using equal signs. If you don't have a classical solution, you have singularities, you have no idea what's going on. And moreover, the classical geometry should be thought of as basis vectors of the Hilbert space of this configuration. So there's a Hilbert space which has e to the s dimensions. It's spanned by these classical solutions, but the typical guy in the Hilbert space will not be classical. But the only thing we are doing is we're trying to build up this Hilbert space, and we're trying to show that it's actually spanned by classical solutions. The second question is, people in Saclay say antibrains are bad, and again, this has to do with the answer to this thing about singularity. Antibrains are actually singular, so you know what you asked before. And moreover, this singularity implies there's an instability, which is tachyonic. It's very bad for cosmology, people who want to do cosmology, compactifications, KKLT, multiverse, and so on and so forth. This antibrain story is kind of annoying them. We got letters from them telling us to stop working on it because, you know, we got even menacing letters from people who work on fluxon pachifications. They're very angry on us in Saclay, but for black holes, this is very good. Because black hole microstates are near extremal, and from a CFT perspective, they correspond to left movers and right movers, which can actually intersect and decay, and that's Hawking radiation. That's Hawking radiation on the money, and this was shown very nicely by Mathur and Chaudhuri, and also by Horizontos and Myers, that instabilities are natural, they are present, and they make sense from a CFT perspective. So you want instabilities. This is actually what string theory tells you. You must have instabilities when you have microstates of near extremal black holes. And third question about firewalls and stuff, can you fall to the horizon drinking a coffee? Well, again, there are three options. You know, either analyze infinite density shells or membranes, you know, stuff can increase the freedom at the horizon, which shouldn't stay there. You know, you must have the tooth fairy or Mickey Mouse supporting it because otherwise it's just going to collapse. Or otherwise you can just modify your theory by weird terms and just analyze what's happening. Or you can actually use solutions of string theory. It's a choice. My feeling is that, you know, we know string theory, we know you can get entropy, so this is what we should be doing, and then, you know, we should be pushing as much as we can in this direction. Thanks.
In the classical theory of black holes, there are two important theorems, right? One is the uniqueness of the Kerr geometry. Mm-hmm. The second is the stability, the mechanical stability. Mm-hmm. How are these demonstrated in
So first of all, there's no uniqueness because, you know, you work in higher dimensions. So you don't only have classical gravity. You work in 10 dimensions. You work in string theory. In string theory, I can have many, many fluxes. And essentially, I can have dynamics in the compact dimensions. So to prove uniqueness, or for example, to prove that there are no black hole solitons, which is, you know, again, some old theorems, people just assumed that nothing happens on the internal dimensions. There's no dynamics on them. And then, of course, you get a 4D theory, which is highly constrained, where you can prove these theorems. Once you go to 10 dimensions, you can have dynamics in these extra dimensions. And this dynamics actually evades this theory. This is actually what evades. If you didn't have these dynamics, this wouldn't work. If you didn't have string theory, if you just have 4D gravity with some fields and so on, this would not work. You need dynamics in higher dimensions for all this stuff to work.
Any other questions?
Can I ask something related to the previous question? So in GR, stability is important for curve, but uniqueness is a nice feature, but not something that one should look after. Is it true?
Well, it seems that you actually need non-uniqueness to get e to the fs states, so you need the exact opposite.
But I mean,
many states, right?
I don't see any problem with it.
Well, I think it's a feature in another book, as far as I can tell.
But they shouldn't be too far macroscopically.